On today's episode of Good Word, Amin Alhassan joins me to discuss options for Damian Lillard now that he's been waived by the Bucks. What does Giannis think about all of this? LeBron James and his future with LA and their center options. The New York Knicks just hired Mike Brown and Amin's free agent picks. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A couple of bits of business to get into. Of course, we are on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. We just had a funny moment with Amin Alhassan because it just appeared to me Amin is so relaxed. He struck me like that video of Marvin Gaye when he was about to sing, and he was singing on his couch, and he was laid all the way out. He was so relaxed, you couldn't tell that he was about to sing his heart out. That's what you look like right before we straighten out your camera. Amin Alhassan, what's going on?
Let me just say right now, in your intro, you said, my name is Vincent Goodwill, and then you said senior writer, NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, but the way you said it, sounded like Vincent Goodwill Sr. And I said, I knew it. I knew he had one somewhere out there. He been pretending all this time.
Well, there is an actual Vincent Goodwill Sr. and that's my daddy. Okay. So absolutely not. No kids for me. Why would you wish that on me?
I don't wish it. I suspect it.
If I had kids, best believe I would not be hiding a child. Okay? Because, you know, people would be let it be known that I had a child in these streets.
Out of Detroit, Vincent Goodwill III, he goes to Country Day, and they're like, oh, is that, are you any relation? Nah, it's just a coincidence.
I mean, you must not know how expensive Country Day is. That's more expensive than college. Ain't no way no special kid of mine would be going to Country Day. Neighborhood high. East Side high, baby. Oh my God. This is why me and Amin can't hang out often in public places in front of people, because people don't know how to act. I guess today we have to start with the news du jour of Damian Lillard getting released, or the stretch provision being used by the Milwaukee Bucks, which means it's $110+ million will be stretched out over the next 5 seasons that allowed the Milwaukee Bucks to sign Miles Turner in free agency. I'm very curious what Amin Alhassan thinks that Giannis Antetokounmpo and Doc Rivers is going to do with that. But before we begin, was Dame done wrong here?
No. For a couple of reasons. Number one, I got to go to Mark Spears' tweet, which I think clarifies better than anything. He said, this is a win-win. Don't feel sad for Dame. Before his injury, he was seriously contemplating declining that option, that $54+ million option on the second year of his deal. That's how miserable he was in Milwaukee. So now he gets an immediate exit and all his money. I guess Vinny, I'm curious if you've noticed the same thing this year. Maybe it's been happening for a couple of years, but this year I'm noticing more than anything. No one's getting waived. Everyone is getting released to find a better, and a big time talent has hit the market, and everything is worded as a positive, right? Wave, bad. Released, brought out, like, agreed to a dissolution. They got all these euphemisms for they cut his ass, right? So, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. People get cut. It doesn't mean you're not good enough. It's just that they thought they could do something better with this money. That's what getting cut means, with this money or this roster spot. So in the case of Damian Lillard, well, he didn't have to give up a dime. The money's still coming in. He gets to choose where he goes, but more importantly, he could choose not to go anywhere. He could choose to go home and hang out with his kids that he's missed for the last 2 years, right? And just be at home every day, rehab, and be at home and take his kids to school and pick them up and all. These are all things he gets to do now without sacrificing a nickel. And then at the end of the year, he can then evaluate, how do I feel? Where do I want to go? Et cetera, et cetera. So Dame didn't get done dirty at all. No.
I mean, I think for all the reasons that you said, like, look, we knew Dame was not happy. Like, we got to rewind back to this. When Dame requested a trade out of Portland, he initially wanted to go to Miami, and Milwaukee stepped in and was like, hey, we don't need any more space between us and the Miami Heat. Mm. We're going to intercept this and make the best offer for Damian Lillard, not knowing whether Damian Lillard was actually open to playing in Milwaukee. I believe it's something like a six-hour flight to get from Milwaukee to Portland. I feel like there's so many more places that you can go to in between that are not as far. So, yeah, I get why. I mean, he may not want to be there and may want to be closer to his babies.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially like somewhere that he didn't want to be in the first place. Because I know a lot of people say, well, hold on, Vinny. Miami to Portland is the longest flight in the NBA. Yeah, but it's a lot different when you want it to be somewhere with the longest flight. You were prepared to accept that. It's different when you go somewhere where you weren't. That's not where you were. You getting your hopes up for. And so, from that standpoint, I think. Look, and I think Damian Lillard probably more so than most guys, because I know someone brought this up that Chris Paul hasn't lived with his kids basically since he was a Clipper, not in the, during the season, right? Because Houston, then OKC, then Phoenix, then Golden State. He's, for most of those stops, he's been close enough to a flight away from home, never felt the need to move his family.
Right.
Right. But at the same time, takes a toll, right? Like, I want to be around my family. It's the same situation. It's a different situation, I think, with Damian Lillard. Number one, hadn't had that continuous presence, right? Or excuse me, having had that continuous presence in Portland, and then all of a sudden you're in Milwaukee, and I think this situation is hard. It hits him harder than it might hit a standard player who's living away from home, basically. But at the end of the day, again, the things that we will accept, the sacrifices we will accept, are commensurate with what we think we're getting with them. I'm preparing. Look, I'm gonna play for the Miami Heat. I want to play for this organization, this coach, and I want to play with these teammates. That's what I'm prepared to sacrifice family time for. So it's not a case of where people can just say, well, Milwaukee's good. Giannis is good. Why don't you just want to play there? It's not the same. That's not what he's sacrificing for. He was sacrificing for something specific. Right. And I could see why he was not content.
Look, and here's the thing. Now he's at a spot where he's rehabbing and he can pretty much choose to not sign with a team, although I think he might wind up signing with a team. I don't think it's necessarily out of the question. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's best for him to go and be with the Lakers or go and be with some other team, get with their medical staff, get accustomed to at least some things conceptually with the team so that a year from now, whatever condition you are in, even if we're not sure if Damian Lillard is a starting point guard next year because he's going to be 36 years old coming off of an Achilles, would it be better for him to sign with a team, or is it better for him, like you said, to take the year off, do the best rehab and physical therapist that money can buy, and then pick a team next summer?
Look, I mean, it's tough, right? It's tough for any team that's interested in signing him. You're talking about a two-year deal. No one wants him there for a year. And then, like, he gets better, like, all right, thanks a lot, guys, bye. And then he goes and plays somewhere else. So you want him for at least 2 years. Then the next part that comes is, like, beyond rehabbing, beyond supervising his rehab, what value do we have from having him around? And I think when you say that, when you ask the question that way, I think there's one destination in particular that I think they should be very interested in bringing Damian Lillard in. The Portland Trailblazers.
Pray tell. Ooh, okay. All right.
If I'm the Blazers, right, like, bring him in, rehab, all that stuff. Number one, closer to the fam. Number two, it might be the only destination out of the interested parties where it's like, we need your intangibles. We need you here to show these guys how to be pros, how to do things the right way. We just saw them get rid of DeAndre Ayton. Why? Right? Jason Quick of The Athletic pretty much laid it all out. The dude was unprofessional. And they didn't want that influence around a bunch of young, impressionable guys that they have high hopes for. Chauncey Billups has a way of he wanted doing things, a way of, just like he was as a player, a way of professionalism in his organization, in his locker room. Who's a better professional and a better leader than Damian Lillard? You come in, you rehab under us, we get you right. In the meantime, you're not going to be isolated from our team. We want you around our rookies. We want you talking to guys, letting them know things on the court, things off the court, how to approach diet, exercise, social life, all those things. He provides a massive value in year one of a deal. And I don't know of any other destination, not the Lakers, not the Heat, not anywhere else, where they could say, no, no, we need you right now. We don't need you for a year from now. I hope you're feeling better. We need you right now. I think Portland would be a great fit.
Okay, so now that we figured out the Dame stuff, I mean, as you've switched locations for the people on YouTube, where does this leave Giannis Antetokounmpo? Like, he signed his extension that from the Dame Lillard trade. That kicks in this year, mm-hmm. right? So he has 2 years and a player option for an ungodly amount.
Yeah.
But it feels like the Milwaukee Bucks are not better constructed, better suited to make a run through the Eastern Conference. They don't even have a point guard. So where do they actually go from here? There's some point guards on the market, but it doesn't feel like there's no more move. There doesn't feel like there's more moves for John Horst in his front office left to play.
Yeah, no, this is so I've been describing this as a team that's been operating under extreme basketball debt, right? It's not like cash owed, but like all their resources are owed. They owe pretty much all their picks through 2030. Either, or the rights to their picks, right? So whether pick swaps, whether outright first rounders, second rounders are all out the door till about 2030. And so you're put in a position where you can't even, and they, other than a second round pick coming in this upcoming draft, they have nothing incoming. So they've effectively run out of all the resources available to acquire, and then also they've run out of any sort of safety net in terms of if anything goes wrong. And I think that's a big thing to keep in mind. As far as who's on the market, I mean, Chris Paul is still available. And you know, he's damn sure a lot better than a lot of guys he could bring in off of the G League or other point guards on the market. But it just highlights kind of the position you're in. I think ultimately that's the thing about the Damian Lillard stretch waiver is it was a nuclear option. They gave up 2 pick swaps and 2 first-rounders for him. One was already conveyed. One conveys in 2 years, right? And then, it conveys to 29, the pick swaps are in 28 and 30. And then they also gave up Drew Holiday, who they'd also given up about, 4 first-round picks for. So you hit that red button. It's not, oh, we just swapped out Damian Lillard for Miles Turner. It's not, So we're paying effectively $49 million a year for Miles Turner. It's you nuked a whole bunch of devoted resources to get Miles Turner. And that's not a knock on Miles Turner, but if we are talking about reasons to hit the nuclear button, it's because there's a risk reward. There's a risk reward. I'm going to take this risk. Why? Because I think my ceiling is amazing if it plays out the way I think it should. Miles Turner is a good center, and he's not overpaid. I see a lot of people trying to crack on how much they paid for him. I think in general, he is in line with all the other starting centers in the market, whether it's Isaiah Hartenstein, whether it's Jared Allen, Nick Claxton, Naz Reid, who technically isn't a starting center, right? It's all around the same salary level. So I don't think his salary is crazy. I just think, what does Miles Turner do for this team? Right. Like, if we start counting teams in the Eastern Conference, do you feel very confident that the Bucks are going to be a top 6 team with Miles Turner? I don't.
Let's count them out. Let's count them out. New York Knicks, who we're going to get to. They just hired Mike Brown. We're going to talk about them.
One.
New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes, 2.
Orlando Magic.
3.
Sneaky. Atlanta Hawks.
I'm with it. I can see why people would be skeptical because we still got to see them actually do it. But I'm with you. Four.
Detroit Pistons.
There you go. Five. Keep going.
And does Boston still
have
enough?
Absolutely. Six. That's six right there.
So six right there.
We haven't talked about the Philadelphia 76ers. I know it's a punchline, but if they're healthy, like,
yeah,
that's a different story. It's a very different story. So you got to talk about the Sixers. And then at that point, so now we've named seven teams. Now you start to name mm-hmm. teams that the Bucks are better than, but it's like, how much better? Because on a bad day, I could see you losing to these cats, the Miami Heat. They're still going to hang mm-hmm. around. They're still going to be pesky as ever. I think mm-hmm. the Toronto Raptors are going to be a lot better with a healthy Brandon Ingram. I think mm-hmm. The Chicago Bulls can be just, they're irritating enough to be a 10 seed every year. But that's, again, mm-hmm. that's irritating enough. And even the Indiana Pacers, who I think they have major question marks because you lost your starting center and your starting point guard. It can't just be, oh, Isaiah Jackson is back. He'll be fine. The guy's coming off an Achilles. And Nembhard and TJ McConnell, it's unfair to ask them to replicate what they did in a seven-game series over 82
games.
For
82 games.
That's not the
That's
same.
Impossible.
It's not the same.
It's impossible.
So, but having said that, it ain't going to be a pushover now. It ain't going to be a walk in the park.
Right.
So you start looking
right.
around. It's like, who are the teams that we know the Bucks are absolutely better than? Charlotte, Washington, Brooklyn.
That it?
I think I stopped counting, man.
I think that's it. And those are teams you're supposed to be better than anyway.
Yes.
Like, this feels like, not that Giannis wants to go, because it feels like, I always say this all the time, you leave a relationship when you want to leave the relationship. You stay in a relationship because you don't want to leave the relationship. Giannis does not want to leave Milwaukee. And they keep pressing the nuclear buttons to make him stay. But as his greatness starts to wane, I mean, like, we assume that from 2017 until now, you can pencil Giannis in for 30, 11 boards, 6 or 7 assists, a couple of blocks, a steal or whatever. With the way he plays, the violent nature of how he plays, I don't know how much longer he can continue to play this way in a healthy way coming up on age 31. So he almost has to – he should be looking – hot take here. He should be looking at Damian Lillard and saying, you know what? Damian Lillard waited 2 years too long before he made his trade request. Don't let that be me.
Well, I mean, Kevin.
You know what I mean?
The ghost of Kevin Garnett hovers around every superstar who's been with this team. KG said, I mean, KG was MVP of the league in 2004. And then I believe they missed the playoffs in 2005.
That was the year where he got the John Thompson crying interview because. Yeah. Of Flip Saunders being fired the next year.
Yep. Flip Saunders got fired. And then Dwayne Casey came in, and Dwayne Casey was decent, and then they fired him too. But this is my point. When people are like, oh, these superstars, I can't believe they're how arrogant they are, and they don't take it. Like, it's not about like running from responsibility. The point is that when you are a superstar NBA player, you have a window. Every player has a window. I got to make as much money as possible to support my family. Every single player, right? But then when you're a superstar player, you have a specific window where I have to achieve as many accolades as possible, chief among them a championship. And if I exit that window, I have lost an opportunity I can never regain, and I'm going to be judged for it. Right, I said this after they won the championship, or like a couple years after they won the championship. I said, Brooke Lopez will never have to buy a drink again in Milwaukee. Jrue Holiday
never.
Gets a red carpet everywhere he goes in Milwaukee. Bobby Portis, they chant his name whenever he walks in any establishment. Will never have to get a reservation anywhere. Giannis, they'll say, well, yeah, it was one. That's what they'll say about you, right? Those other guys can retire, and obviously Jrue Holiday went on and win another one, but they all can retire and everyone say, hey, man, you can't talk to me. I'm an NBA champ. But for Giannis,
right.
His conversation goes a little bit further than did you ever win. It's how many did you win? Because I'm measuring myself not against the the regular NBA player, the standard NBA player.
Right.
I'm measuring myself against the greats, against the Michaels, the Larrys, the LeBrons, the Steph Currys. I want to be mentioned with them, the Kevin Durants. I want to be mentioned with them. And if I only have one, I'm at the kiddie table. And that's the desperation of a superstar. It's not about disloyalty. It's not about anything more than I'm 31 years old. I can't waste my time waiting for y'all to get your act together.
And here's the thing. This is where the CBA really screws the superstars in that way. I mean, because you have to take the max as a star. Like the PA would get on your behind if you do not take every dollar offered to you. But there's fewer mechanisms for you as a franchise to build around your superstar. You have to exhaust all the mechanisms that you can, which in turn puts you in a box called the second apron.
Yeah.
You can't use mid-level exceptions. You can't use biannuals. You can't aggregate contracts to go get another superstar, even if you wanted to go get one. You couldn't do it. Like, that's what makes the Luka Doncic, LeBron James pairing so interesting, if nothing else, because you got two players who totally make $100 million and they're on two big boy maxes. You can't do anything around them. Except, and then you got Giannis, who's going to make $69 million at the end of his contract. It's impossible to do urgent team building and to do it smartly. Like everybody says, be like Sam Presti. Sam Presti got job security, man. He can do things that other people cannot do because he can afford to be able to do it.
Sam Presti raised his organization to the ground three times in his tenure. The day he walked in, he took a team that won 50-some-odd games and went to the second round of the playoffs and said, yeah, we're not going to win a championship with Ray Allen and Rashard Lewis. Raised it to the ground, right? Durant, Jeff Green, Russell Westbrook moved to Oklahoma City. Then that team did its thing, and then Durant left, and then maybe not all the way to the ground, but they definitely raised it down with Westbrook and just a collection of people around him.
Stuff.
Yep. And then
stuff.
Brought in Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, and then eventually ditched all those guys and raised it to the ground and then built what we have here. And he did all of that with the same ownership, and never at any point in time did he ever have to worry, hey man, we better start winning soon or else my job is, my seat gets hot. He never had that thought. He never had that on his back. And that is a luxury. But again, Vinny, this is where I go back to, because Sam Hinkie tried to do the same thing. And the thing that Sam Hinkie did not realize is your number one job as the chief basketball decision maker is to manage up. And folks upstairs are happy. You can do whatever you want. Ernie Grunfeld was GM of the Wizards for 20 million years because he did this really well. You manage up, you manage down. You got to keep people happy everywhere. If you do that, doesn't matter how good of a scout you, if you don't do that, excuse me, no matter how good of a scout you are, doesn't matter how smart you are at the cap, doesn't matter how advanced your analytics are, none of those things matter as much as just your ability to keep these people happy and keep these people happy. Or at least in line.
Right. Well, I would say Sam Hinkie's greatest mistake was actually never going and getting actual real live NBA players and just saying the brilliant strategy is just to lose. Dog, any idiot could do that. We just gonna lose and then I'm gonna pick an injured player in the draft. No, I thought that was insulting of intelligence. Like, you would not insult me. I think Sam Presti's actually really good because he actually gets players who can live in Oklahoma City, who like playing together. Like, he does an amazing job of figuring out team building in a way that I don't think the Daryl Morey's has figured out, the Sam Hinkie's have figured out. I'll give him a lot of credit on that.
It's the interpersonal part. That's yes. The missing link right there. It's the ability to understand what motivates people and how to communicate to people so that we're all on the same page.
And when we come back, because we got to talk to Knicks, we're going to talk to Knicks and we're going to talk LeBron. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Amin L. Hassan. Amin just came across our news wires. The New York Knicks are going to hire Mike Brown to be their newest head coach. people who have listened to this show, listen to me now. Believe me later. That's a Bomani thing. But listen to me all the time. Because I told y'all as soon as Tibbs got fired, I told y'all that's going to hire Mike Brown. Go back and listen to it. Maybe Dakota will pull up some stuff from YouTube where I've been saying repeatedly, Mike Brown is the guy. Not Michael Malone. Not any of these other people. It's going to be Mike Brown. Now, the question I have for you, Amin, is you just talked about managing up and managing down. Does Mike Brown have the gravitas to manage down? Does he have the temperament to manage up?
All right, so let's start with Mike Brown's past experience that makes him good for this job. He's coached the biggest superstar in the game, right?
Yes.
So at the heights of it, like going to conference finals, winning 60 games, et cetera, et cetera. And he's coached a ornery down, like kind of turning down superstar Kobe Bryant in Los Angeles, a market that is unforgiving and has a high standard, right? So in terms of many of the names they talked about, how many of them have experience in the, so to speak, in the real trenches? Not don't give me not saying Mark Daigneault was a name, but like don't give me Mark Daigneault. Oh, he's done a great job. That's not the you this isn't that same. This is not that job, right?
Right.
This dude has lived it. He's seen it. He's prepared for it in a way. So Taylor Jenkins, who I think is a really good coach, deserves another opportunity. But I'd have questions. Yo, Taylor Jenkins, are you ready for what this monster is? This type of fan base, this type of media market, this type of ownership, let's say it. All of these things, man, are not of a typical NBA experience. And so I like that Mike Brown has that experience. I like that Mike Brown went to Golden State and came out of that situation with a better understanding of how I should be coaching. We don't give coaches enough credit, Vinny, in terms of their growth. I heard people arguing about Jason Kidd, for example, using examples from when he was in Brooklyn. Like, oh, you mean when he was coaching for the first time? You don't think in the decade plus he might have picked up a thing or two, right? We would never say that about a 19-year-old rookie 5 years later. Why are we saying this about a coach? So I think Mike Brown has definitely grown as a coach from what he was in Cleveland to what he was in Sacramento. I thought he did an excellent job in Sacramento. Now, here's the fun part. Managing up and managing down. Now, managing down, the difference between Sacramento and New York is I think he's walking into a locker room of soldiers, of guys who are ready to. They've been coached hard. They like being coached hard. They're not strangers to it. So Mike Brown's style is not going to come as...
Do they like being coached hard?
I don't get the... Let me put it this way. Everybody I talk to, do they have complaints about Tibbs? Of course. Everyone has complaints about every coach. Guys at the Warriors have complaints about Steve Kerr. Everyone has complaints about every coach. Just like your parents. You love your parents, but like, oh, mom, really? We all do it, right? But was it, get this guy out of here? No. That certainly wasn't the sentiment in that locker room. And so, again, I don't think Mike Brown is on Tom Thibodeau's level of inflexibility. I think he's more flexible, but I do think he is an attention to detail guy. And I think those guys are willing and able to be coached in that way. And way more willing, way more bought in a way that Sacramento, that group was not. Particularly your star player.
Oh, yeah, that's a that is an excellent point from you about that in particular. But go ahead. Continue. So,
Jalen Brunson, you're not gonna have to have a whole lot of arguments with them about doing things a certain way. Now, the part that might be difficult, which is the part that probably led to Mike Brown's dismissal in Sacramento. Did he manage up? And particularly, did he manage up not to his general manager, not to Monty Morris at the time, or not to Monty McNair, not to Wes Wilcox, not even to Vlade Divac, who is the shadow hanging around, even though they exercised that demon, he's still kind of haunting the premises. No, all the way up. All the way up. And that's where Mike Brown failed, and that's where Tom Thibodeau allegedly failed. Did not manage all the way up. And so them folks in the front office, they ain't going to protect you, bro. So Mike Brown, in essence, is walking into a situation. I've got to get these guys bought in. I think that's going to happen. No big deal. I've got to do it in a way that makes the front office more comfortable with the minutes played and the rotations and all that. And they've helped them. Yabusele as a signing has definitely helped. Jordan Clarkson as a signing, it's definitely helped, giving them some depth. But then over all of that, there's a guy upstairs who wakes up one day and is like, oh, I don't like you. You've got to be able to manage that one. There's some glad handing in that job. There's some, you know, like there's oh, yeah, what time's your band playing? Yeah, no, I'll come check it. I'll bring the guys with me. That's part of the job. It sounds ridiculous. I mean, that doesn't matter. This is New York. All I got to tell you is that dude got the team to the conference finals for the first time in 25 years, and they told him, hit the bricks. So don't tell me that's not part of the job. It is absolutely part of the job.
It's a huge part of the job. It is a bigger part of the job than people want to give it credit for, because they act like James Dolan is some invalid who does not make decisions, when clearly he is the driving force. As reported by me, he was the driving force behind Tom Thibodeau being fired. Okay? Now, here's the part that I look at. And I don't think this is a Mike Brown failing, and I don't think this was a Tom Thibodeau failing. I do not think you can make a considerable run to the NBA Finals with defensive liabilities at the point of attack and at the rim. I've never seen it. I've never seen it. Jalen Brunson, Karl Towns, I've never seen an instance where at the two most critical positions on the floor, both of those guys are the marks. And I don't know if Mike Brown can do anything about that. I just think there is a flaw in how the New York Knicks are built in the moment.
I think ultimately defense is a contextual thing. I don't have to be the 94 Knicks. I just got to be good enough in moments. I got to, as Dan D'Antoni once famously said, the best defense is the team that scored more points. Right? Let's be real, right? Like, they're so crushing. Yeah, we beat them though. So if I can score more than they can, that means my defense was better. Even if I'm known as the offensive team and they're known as a defensive team, it means my ability to stop you surpassed your ability to stop me. That's the name of the game. And so I think it's difficult. What you're describing is absolutely difficult. They don't put themselves in a position of strength, but I think there are ways around it. And I think ultimately, when you get to the playoffs, the chess match begins. And so it becomes, I can't have both of them at the same time for extended periods? Okay. Swap them out. One on, one off. Do that as much as you can. And obviously, everyone else on the floor has to be stellar. And we've got to have systems, and we've got to adhere to systems, and we have to. So one of the things is like Karl Towns. Like, it's not just, oh, poor defensive player. It's like, you're poor team defensive player. We want you to greet the ball. You're set. Like, these are things that, again, need to be communicated. Now, if you're Tom Thibodeau, I don't know whether he was allowed to, whether he felt unafraid. I do know that as a new head coach coming in, you get to request things and demand things of guys that, like, people are more willing to listen to because you're new.
Right.
As opposed to you've been here and like, man, I ain't doing that. So
right.
I think if Mike Brown comes in and is like, look, Carl, we need you. We need you to be able to defend this and do this and all that. I think that's different than coming in like, hey, I just got here yesterday. All right, man, I need you. There's a big difference between having a whole summer and a full training camp to do that versus first day of camp I walked in and this is my, I'm still introducing myself to people and they're already telling me I got to change the way I defend and everything.
Right. It's a weird thing. I'm very fascinated to see what Mike Brown, who initially cut his bones as a defensive-minded coach, and then once he got with Steve Kerr, he picked up a lot of the Steve Kerr warrior movement concepts and made Sacramento one of the best offenses, even though he had two players who couldn't shoot in Domas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox, or two players who were not shooters. I'm going to say they can't shoot. They were just not shooters. Now for the LeBron James portion of the program.
Oh, there we go. We got
to pay
the bills.
Brought to you by Yahoo Sports. We got to. We got to do it. We got to do it, right? So LeBron is an expiring contract. Mm-hmm. It's too hard to trade him because it's very hard to trade somebody who makes $52.5 million or whatever it is, $56.5 million or whatever it is. Brooke Lopez allegedly passed on the Lakers because of that contract. It's a possibility that DeAndre Ayton could sign with the Lakers. My question is, for those of you who look at the Lakers and say, you are a DeAndre Ayton away, and DeAndre Ayton is all those things that he was accused of being by Jason Quick and some of the whispers, how do you think J.J. Redick's crazy ass is going to deal with DeAndre Ayton? Do you want him to combust?
That's my thing about it, right? J.J. Redick has proven he is a very particular kind of guy, and he has very little patience for anyone who does not approach this profession with the seriousness that he approached it as a player and he approaches it now as a coach. There's a reason why there's an in-crowd and an out-crowd with the Lakers. LeBron isn't in the crowd. Dorian Finney-Smith isn't in the crowd, or was in the in-crowd. I guess he's out now. Austin Reeves is in the in-crowd. Dalton Connect, sit your ass over there. Dalton Connect went from LeBron's favorite player in the draft. Oh, I loved him at Tennessee, too. Sit your ass over there. Try to trade your ass. Couldn't. Sit your ass over there some more. Knee shooting? I'm going to look. Gabe Vincent, maybe you shot once, one playoff run 3 years ago. I'll give you another shot. He's a very particular guy. On the other end of the spectrum, you have DeAndre Ayton, a world of talent, but literally got run out of a team that didn't even win 40 games, right? This isn't like, hey, man, we don't need you. It's like, no, like, you can leave. We're terrible. You can leave because what we're doing here, you're not with it. Late to meetings. Like all the things that I just described about J.J. Redick values, I don't even think Dalton Connect was that bad in terms of professionalism. This guy is something else. Now, can he change? I think he can. It's still early, even though there's a guy that said, well, I make max money, so I don't need to do anything different, which is always a red flag. Someone who thinks the money validates however they've done things. But I do think he can. I don't think L.A. is the place where the fans are crazy, where you're going to hear it everywhere. I don't think L.A. is the place where LeBron is not the uplifting LeBron from 8 years ago. This is LeBron. This is my last hurrah. Look at that statement from Rich Paul. He values winning at this stage of his career. I'm not here to wait for you to figure out, hey, I don't need you to do that little flip shot. I need you to dunk the damn thing when I pass you the ball. And definitely not for that coach, not J.J. Redick. No one's got patience for any of that. And then the flip side of it is also Lakers. Jake LaRavia and DeAndre Ayton, that's your offseason? That's your offseason.
Look, their number one goal, is to make sure that we get Luka Doncic to stay. I believe it is very hard to split the baby. Split the baby being we got to give LeBron what he needs. We got to get Luka what he needs. Luka needs a rim runner. LeBron needs shooters. And they both need wing defenders because neither one of them are defending anything. Yeah. I don't know if there's a way to fulfill both objectives in the same offseason when both needs are so specific.
There is no, because it's in essence, it's what the Warriors tried to do. It's what the Nuggets tried to do, except they were doing that off of a championship and the Lakers are doing it off of a second round knockout or whatever it was, right?
But here's the thing, you can't be playing for the future when Luka Doncic is 26 years old. This man ain't 20.
This roster is not good. I said it from the moment they acquired him. Roster is not good enough, folks. Roster's not good enough. Like, you have to be real. You have to be real with yourself. This roster's not good enough. And now, once you accept it's not good enough, all right, what am I going to do to make it good enough? How can I go about augmenting it? But again, like the Bucks, not to their degree, but still there's a level of basketball debt that the Lakers are operating under. They still have picks that they owe. Until they get out from under that, it's hard to go out and go get things. Now, Dorian Finney-Smith decides he wants to go be a Rocket. The Lakers, at that point, are they? Yeah,
apron team.
They're an apron team. So bing, bang, boom, you're screwed. You can't even sign. This is the part where the apron talk really, really hamstrings. That's the whole point of the aprons. It's, hey, you like this team? You sure about that? You like this team? All right, man. Then you should be good. You don't need no signing trades, right? You don't need no full mid-level exception.
If you like this team, you better love it.
Yep. Yep. It's done on purpose. And these teams are going to learn to either remain flexible and make hard decisions early or find out later there are no decisions to be made.
Well, here's the crazy thing. This is going to set up for, and what it looks like, you can't have two max players on the team anymore. You can't have two big boy maxes. Mm-hmm. You can have a rookie scale max and a big boy max. I do not believe in today's NBA that you can have two big boy maxes. The big boy max is being you can take a 25% of the cap or 30% of the cap. It's impossible to do that, in my opinion.
But you know what the crazy thing is? LeBron... Because the 30% and the 25%, all that stuff is based on when you sign it. But then you get the raises, and the only thing
that go with the cap that go with the cap going up.
If the cap goes up, and you know they obviously with the smoothing now that we know, but so LeBron is at 35% of the cap, and Luka's at 30% of the cap this year. There you go. That's right there. That's 65% of your cap space has gone to two players. So now you got to figure out how to spend the rest of the way with quality players, but not go above a certain threshold. Otherwise, you start losing basketball maneuverability. It's not about people being cheap anymore. It's about if I cross this line, now I can't do anything. It's a tough game. It's a tough business now, but I'm thinking these teams are going to figure it out sooner or later. I'll tell you how to have two big boy maxes if your scouting department is out of this world.
And if you draft out of this world, or
minor leagues or sign in from Europe and your player development is terrific, you can do it. You can do it, right? But at some point, you do it too well, guys are going to want to be compensated. And that's why you need continuous development, continuous scouting. The work never ends because ultimately these guys are going to want to get paid. And that's when you say, you know what? Thank you very much. Congratulations. And then you go find the next guy like that.
Put it like this, and I've said this before and people, I get blue in the face. I don't think this is great for the game. I don't think.
The transient nature or what?
Because it doesn't feel like, I mean, there's connective tissue from season to season. It just feels like these are random instances that you simulate. If you simulate July, then you'll simulate the regular season and you'll simulate the playoffs. Like this is NBA Live 95, like old reference, right? But that's what it feels like. It doesn't feel like from season to season that there is the story that, in theory, that we grew up on. I know this is not the NBA that we grew up on, I mean, but you got to see teams who were coming and they went from, a plucky first round team to a team that got to the second round, to a team that got to the conference finals. And maybe they got to the finals and maybe they didn't, but it felt like from year to year, from over a 5-year, 6-year period, you got to see the story of this team grow with the players and the cast of characters around them. Now it just feels like, wait, who plays where?
So let me ask you this.
He plays where?
What would you change?
We really have to play who he played for.
What would you change?
If I had to change one thing, this is the only thing I would change because the CBA is the CBA. Mm-hmm. I am shocked and I'm kind of disappointed that teams did not put mechanisms in place for you to sign your own players that does not – sign your own players that you drafted. Mm-hmm. Maybe not that you signed, but guys that you drafted and not have that count as much against – maybe the number of the percentage of the cap or the apron or whatever it was, because it penalizes excellence.
How do we?
It turns everybody into mediocre.
Wait, so you want if I draft a player and then he comes up, and let's say I did a great job drafting this guy is Jalen Williams. He's going to get a max extension. You think it should count? The cap hit should be less.
Yes.
Okay, so then let me ask you this.
You're still paying them. You're still paying them what you're paying them, but the cap hit itself so that it doesn't prevent you from using the other mechanisms to keep him and get better at the margins.
How do we?
I don't think you should be penalized for drafting well.
How do we define I drafted him? Right? So
that's an ex.
So Phoenix drafted a guy based off a pick that Houston sent them in the Durant deal, but technically that deal still hasn't happened yet. Did Phoenix draft him? Did Houston draft him?
If he's on, if he's a rookie on your roster by July 15th.
So Andrew Wiggins in 2014, when he got to Minnesota, they didn't draft him.
Right, right. Cleveland so August 1. How about that?
Okay.
But he was there by August 1.
Yes.
Would you change that? Do you think I'm tripping?
I think you're tripping. I don't think you're tripping. I see what you're going for. I think the collective bargaining agreement is there because the owners want to make sure that their payrolls don't go out of control. The luxury tax and the second apron is there to make sure the payrolls don't go out of control. You love guys. I think the biggest problem is the max, the individual max. So the moment you say, hey, this is the most I can pay Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right? The most I can pay Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is this, but I know he's probably worth more. That excess is coming back, and there are guys who are good players who may not be on the same level, but they're going to get paid max nonetheless. If there were no max individual salaries, we pay Shai Gilgeous-Alexander what he's worth, and then everything else would fall in line. And then, yes, I like Chet Holmgren. So I'll give you a great example of this. The Nuggets have Nikola Jokic. He's amazing, but he could only make so much.
Right.
Jamal Murray's a pretty good player. Guess what? You're maxing out. Michael Porter Jr. is an inconsistent player, but he's got flashes. So you're maxing out. Once we have that limit right there, we get all the way up to the limit. If I paid Joker $80 million a year, it becomes real quick, real apparent, real quick. I have X amount left. What is Jamal Murray actually worth? What is Michael Porter Jr. actually worth? And if someone else wants to roll the dice, I'll pay $45 million a year for Michael Porter Jr., have at it. And pretty soon, teams are going to realize, oh, we've been throwing money at people who aren't that, they're not that level. They're good. They're worthy of money. They're not worthy of that money. That's the only way.
No, you're right.
Now, the problem is, and I know why the NBA or why the NBAPA should never, ever approve this, is because you do that, you've essentially killed the middle class. It'll be a bunch of guys making a zillion gajillion dollars and then dudes making $1 million. And
you turn to the NFL and you don't want the NFL. You don't want the NFL. And when we come back, we're going to go through quickly what or who Amin thinks had the best offseason so far. Time for the last word here with Amin Al-Hassan. Amin, a lot of teams have made moves, but I'm going to give you the floor to give me the three teams, since we like lists. Give me the three teams that you think have made the most impressive moves, maybe even with limited resources in the first couple days of free agency.
Hey, man. It's a dead heat. Do I have to rank them or can I just name three teams?
No, you can just name them.
Let's start. Houston Rockets. So Houston Rockets basically took Jalen Green, upgraded him into Kevin Durant. They took Dylan Brooks, upgraded him into Dorian Finney-Smith. And then they also added Clint Capella in there for good measure. And all it cost them really was a first-round pick and 5 seconds. That's tremendous. They've loaded their roster in a way where they can play any style of basketball. They can play up, they can play down, they can play fast, they can play slow, they can play half court, they can play full court, they can shoot threes, they can switch everything. If they want, you know, they've got such flexibility and so much options. And obviously, Ime Udoka, you know the quality of coach he is. This team is poised to, you know, I kept thinking about after game seven, people talking about, oh, the Thunder, they're going to run the table and they've got the next 3 years on lock and all that stuff. And a week later,
ain't nobody scared.
Dude, a week later, we're like, I don't know, bro. Because like Houston's doing its thing. Then the second name I'm going to say, and I'm not ranking it too, because I put it right there with Houston, is the Denver Nuggets. Right, you go out, mm-hmm. You get a new front office, John Wallace and Ben Tanzer, and they went out. And number one, talk about managing up. The thing that got Michael Malone kicked out, they got done, which is, I don't want Michael Porter Jr. on this team. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, they paid a pretty penny. That's the difference between them and the Rockets. And maybe that's the separation. They paid a pretty penny because right. That unprotected 2032, ladies and gentlemen, 7 years is a long time in the NBA. Vinny, you remember what the NBA was like 7 years ago?
I do. 7 years ago, 2018, yeah. That was Kevin Durant going into his last year in Golden State. That was Toronto like trying to figure out, hey, we just picked up Kawhi Leonard. Is he any good? Right. Like the league moves faster than ever. It moves even faster now than it did then.
Ben Simmons.
So yeah, who knows what the league's going to look like 7 years
from now. Ben Simmons was at a place where we said, if he does this for like 6 more years, he's a Hall of Famer. That's how far those 7 years was. Like he's like, he doesn't need to add a jump shot. If he just does this for 6 more years, the resume will say Hall of Famer at the end of it. That's how far we've gone, right? So the Zion was starting his freshman year at Duke. Who would have predicted Zion would be a flame out, right? So 7 years is a long time. So say like, we'll be fine. It'll be a late first. The hell it will. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what Joker is going to do, whether he's going to be healthy, whether he's going to want to go somewhere else, whether he just
he might not even be playing. He might be retired.
Horses. That's it. So to give up an unprotected first, I felt like, man, that's a dangerous game. But if we're just looking at what they did, they took a guy. Even if you tell me Michael Porter Jr. is better than Cameron Johnson, I'll be like, okay. Is he $17 million better? Because that's the game we're playing. We're not playing who's better. We're playing, is he $17 million better? And if he's not, do I have a better use for that $17 million? And so they go out, they get him. They go out, they trade for Valanciunas. They go out and they bring back Bruce Brown on a minimum. They bring in Tim Hardaway Jr. on a minimum. And all of a sudden, this Nuggets team where we said, look, Joker on the floor, they're great. As soon as he steps off, this thing falls apart. Now they got depth. They're not relying on rookies. They're not relying on second-year players. They've got real dudes who can come in right now. All of them have experience, have played well, and that's the name of the game. If you look at Golden State at its height, they had their main dudes, and what did they always have? An old dog. A David West, an Andrew Bogut, someone who had been Leandro Barbosa. Like, I've lived somewhere else. I've done this. I've come here just to win. That's the name of the game, right? So Denver, I would say, and I will rank them now. Denver's two because of the pick. And then the third. Atlanta.
I'm okay. And that's all I was about to say. It's got to be Atlanta, right?
Atlanta. To me, Houston and Denver, they have every right to look in the mirror and say, we are an NBA championship caliber club. If we see Oklahoma City, we'll beat their ass. They have every right to feel that way, particularly Denver, because Denver could say, we could have beaten them.
We came close to beating
with half a roster and half a hamstring and all that stuff. You give us a full year under David Adelman, not just kind of like picking up the job 2 days before the playoffs start. Right. So Atlanta, though, on paper, really good. On paper, I got to see how it works. I thought when Jalen Johnson was healthy, they were really good. And he got hurt, and then they became same old Atlanta, and people kind of just painted the whole season as same old Atlanta. It wasn't that way. They started to have an identity. Him, Dyson Daniels, Okongwu, they really brought a defensive presence, right? Now they've gotten even better. Nikhil Alexander-Walker adds to that. They've added shooting with him and Luke Kennard and Kristaps Porzingis. Yep. And so now this is my thing. This shout-out goes to Trae Young. For years, I think he's had a valid excuse. I can't. I got to do everything. I have to carry this offense. I can't worry about being efficient. We got to score to win this game. I can't devote energy on the defensive end. I got to carry this whole offense. He's been right. But now you got all the help, bro. You needed shooting, they got you shooting. You needed defense around you, they got you defense around you. So now he's got to adjust. And I wonder if Quinn Snyder's having these conversations with him. Like, you got to adjust. You have to be more judicious with your shot selection, right? I know people are going to point, oh, yeah, Amin, he led the league in assists. It's very easy if the ball is in your hands.
You can manipulate the game to lead the league in assists.
You can manipulate the game. Like, I don't care what the assist number is. I care about how he plays, how quick you get off that ball, how quick you make a decision, and the judiciousness of your shot selection. And then now knowing I don't have to reserve every last calorie of energy for offense, I need you more on the defensive end. Again, I don't think you're going to become Gary Payton, but I need you to move your feet. I need you to send people towards the help. I need you to take charges. I need you to be a better team defender, because now all the excuses are out. You have all the help you need. Now it's time you raise up and become the leader that this team needs.
And sometimes, and look, and David Aldridge made the compliment or the comparison, excuse me, on Twitter the other day. He said, is Trae Young, Allen Iverson, and these Atlanta Hawks, the Philadelphia 76ers? I wouldn't go that far, because I think that these guys are more talented.
Better offense. Like,
there wasn't no Kristaps Porzingis, and there ain't no Larry Brown over there. But I think it's a valid comparison to see if Trae Young can retrofit himself around a better team, especially, once again, another one of these players coming up on a Supermax. Is he worth Supermax money?
So this is my thing. Allen Iverson was basically what Trae was in the before. I have to do all this. I have to shoot 25, 30 times a game. That's the only chance we have of winning. And unfortunately for Allen in Philadelphia, he never got the opportunity to, like, okay, now we got you the help. Now you can be more judicious. You know, he never had that, right? And by the time he tried to do that, it was too late, right? It's not too late for Trae Young. It's not too late for him to change. And again, I accept that, like, hey, man, you had to do that, but now you don't have to do that. So you can't be washing Ziploc bags and air drying out paper towels, man. You don't have to do that no more.
You better play some damn defense. That's all it is. You better play some damn defense. That, ladies and gentlemen, is my man Amin El Hassan. Check out Amin, Basketball Illuminati, Metal Like Media, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, like everywhere. Brother, I appreciate you. See you in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show, i.e. producer Dakota being the entire team. I'll be back next week, God willing, for the next episode of Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.